There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. Midday Mobile on this Monday. A whole brand new work week to work with here on the show, and lots to do this week. Glad you're a part of it. Of course, being a part of the show, lots of ways to get in touch. Phone number, text line, 343-0106. You could also go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065. Twitter, we're on Instagram. You could also, if you want to share pictures on Instagram. Dalton, we got to get some pictures on Instagram. Instagram, we've got that going on as well. And, of course, a website, good old-fashioned website, fmtalk1065.com, where you can get podcasts of the show, and you can also download the podcast buffet style there, or you can subscribe and get them delivered to your phone by going to iTunes for you Apple folks, Stitcher for old Android fuddies like me. A lot of ways to listen to our podcast and, of course, stream our show through TuneIn Radio app on your phone or through the website, fmtalk1065.com. All right, a lot to get into on today's show. We'll talk national politics. We'll talk state politics. We'll also talk about the feds coming to town as the Gulf Marine Resources Council is the group that does the laying down the law when it comes to fishing in the Gulf of Mexico. And they move around. They've been in New Orleans. They'll be down in Florida. But right now, they're going to be in Mobile this week. And we'll talk more about that later this hour with Director of Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. If you want to get down there and hear or see how the sausage is being made, we'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. We'll bring on my buddy and a man who I had a very in-depth conversation with just a second ago about lightning sharks, my buddy Cameron Smith. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, and I want to point out, because of lightning sharks, Dalton, we should also watch our traffic feed, talk to the traffic department. Can we monitor traffic eastbound I-10 heading from Alabama into Florida? Can we see what kind of traffic issues we have there? Because I know nobody's going to go leave a state where you can't buy lotto tickets to go buy lotto tickets. But if they are, they might be clogging traffic up there. That's news story earlier. Cameron said you were as likely to be struck by lightning while being attacked by a shark as you would be winning the Powerball or the Mega Millions. But that doesn't seem to be keeping people from going and buying tickets.
Yeah, Sean, where the gold at? I mean, that's all you need to remember.
That's
is
right.
You know, if people think leprechauns might be there and capable of providing some financial remuneration, hey, the lottery seems completely level-headed.
So, and I was joking to you while we were at the news break. I said, you know, if there's a team out there, like one of those AAF Alliance teams or something, looking for a sporting team, looking for a name, lightning sharks would be pretty cool. And you told me that's yesterday's news, that some of your boys have played on a team called the Lightning Sharks.
Oh, yeah. Little League soccer team, Lightning Sharks. This is it occurred to them as an obvious place to go because, well, lightning and sharks. I mean, come on. Does it get better?
So, y'all, if you have an idea like I did that you've come up with something new, you haven't. The kids have already gotten onto it. All right. Lots to talk about here. By the way, a note here as we talk about voting today, voter registration deadline in the state of Alabama, whether you do it through the online feature, you mail off your letter, or you go down and see somebody at the Board of Registrars, today is your day, the last day to get registered to vote coming up in November. And you talk about that in your latest opinion piece over at AL.com. You said, don't count out the House Republican majority just yet. You and I bounced this around a little bit last week, and it was, I don't know, a couple months ago, it was this foregone conclusion that because of the unpopularity of the president and because of the rules of the road when it comes to how people vote in midterms, that the Republicans were really going to take it on the nose. What's changed in your mind? What's changing out there?
The issue here is percentage chances. I think that there is let's call it a 30% chance that Republicans hold the House. I mean, fundamentally, these things like a general ballot poll and stuff like that, sounds good. It says, oh, well, Democrats are up X number of points. The problem is it's a general ballot poll across a wide swath of likely voters or possible voters, and it's not indicative of specific congressional districts, things like that, and that's ultimately what makes the difference with the House. I think the piece that I wrote and the considerations I'm looking at are when Republicans took the House in a wave election in Obama's midterm in 2010, unemployment was almost 10%, and the president was about where Trump is in terms of popularity. In 2006, when Democrats did it, unemployment was about where it is now, actually a little higher, but President Bush was far less popular than President Trump is right now.
Okay, and of course you quote one of my favorite quotes, James Carville. It's kind of a statement when it comes to voting and turnout here. So let's talk about the known facts right now. Poll out, of course, people can disagree with polls, but President Trump at a 47% approval, which was a couple points above where Barack Obama was at that same time. And then you mentioned President Bush. Where was he in approval?
He was at 35%. This is not close. And I think that's, if you watch the media, and particularly cable news that hates Trump, they're telling you, well, Trump is like the least popular president ever in the history of the universe. That's not true. It's just not true. It doesn't mean that you have to like Trump, but don't act as if, well, he is the least popular. Bush, like I said, in 2006, same rough time frame, 35% approval rating. And so this to me is really an issue of Democrats seem motivated. They seem passionate. They hate Trump, and they're going to show up because they think voting to give the House majority to Democrats will thwart Trump. It might. I think they've got a hard time explaining how that works and motivating voters. The bigger issue for me is, do Trump Republicans who love Trump show up for a midterm? Because Trump said you can't trust Republicans, you can't trust the establishment, can't trust the party, you can trust me. Well, his name's not on the ballot, and the question is, can he turn out voters to show up in some of these districts that are frankly going to be very competitive?
And that was a question in the primaries, right? I mean, it was President Trump would come and endorse one Republican over another or something to that effect, or not endorse a Republican over each other, but special elections, and he would come in, and whether he's going to go to that state or not. And we all questioned, does this have the effect, right? Does he have the magic touch? Is he the kingmaker? And what was our decision back then? Did he end up being a kingmaker when he came to town? Did people win?
Oh yeah, in terms of the primaries, yes. He was able to wield tremendous influence. That's what we're seeing, for example, with DeSantis running for governor in Florida. That's a Trump pick. Trump decided, I'm going to weigh in on some of these races, and he basically got the people that he wanted. That's a primary. The question is, can he do the same thing in a general against Democrats who are fairly motivated to stop him? And in case you hadn't noticed, stopping Trump is the entire Democratic agenda. Mm-hmm. There is no other, like, here's our policy priorities. It's stop Trump at all costs. And I just don't know if that's going to hold the day and give Democrats the House. I think there's a better than not chance it does. But if Republicans show up and say, we're not giving you the House because we're going to show up and vote, yeah, this is still competitive. This is not a foregone conclusion.
All right, come back. I want to talk about that in the Kavanaugh effect. I've talked about that with a couple of people that were come by the studio that will be on the ballot come November. And they tend to think the Kavanaugh effect is live. I would say, okay, Kavanaugh effect in Alabama is one thing, but let's take a tour through some of these more, you know, at least at-risk districts out there, and how does it look? Continue our conversation with our buddy Cameron Smith, AL.com. You can look at the story we're talking about right now. Don't count out the House Republican majority just yet. It's on my Twitter feed, at FMTalk1065. Check it out. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 1220 FM Talk 1065. Midday Mobile on this Monday. Text lines open, 343-0106, 343-0106. Talking to our buddy Cameron Smith from AL.com. Don't count out the House Republican majority just yet. And so this common sense knowledge that we have that the party that's in the White House is going to suffer the hands of fate in the midterm wasn't always the same, and that's good. You're pulling out some actual other facts that contributed to landslide changes in the House and Senate, right?
Yeah, because it's not enough for Democrats can't pick up just six seats or something like that, or even 13. They need to basically defend what they have and pick up 24. So that's sort of a wave election. That's not just a, hey, let me win a couple seats. The waves we've seen are 26 and or 2006 and 2010. I think the economy is, frankly, too good right now for Democrats to expect a 50-60 seat swing. The sort of pundits have it at 25 to 35 right now, which would certainly give them the majority. I'm just not convinced that this is a done deal, that this is over. Of course, Democrats would love that. They would love this to be declared a done deal. Don't bother showing up and voting. I see this a lot like 2016, where the polls and the odds had Hillary Clinton walking away with it. Well, guess what? That's the thing about probabilities and odds, is they're not certainties, they're likelihoods. And so I think Republicans, if they show up, have a very good chance to swing this election in their favor.
So that's what I mean. People are grouping that sentiment under the Kavanaugh effect, right? That this is not that minds were changed, but groups were motivated, and what seemed at maybe first blush a big motivator for Democrats ends up being a big motivator as well for Republicans.
I think you're right. I don't know. The question I'm trying to figure out is, would it have been better for Republicans to have a failed Kavanaugh nomination to get voters to the polls? I think probably so, but the fact that it was so contentious, you had Democrats losing their minds as far as the behavior and some of the things that we saw, that really did, I think, fire up the base, particularly Trump's base, and I do think that they're going to have more Republicans show up at the polls because of it. I think the Senate, for example, is in very good shape right now. I think Republicans holding the Senate is significant, and I think that in large part is demoralizing to Democrats, because you can take the House and you can have oversight hearings and tangle up the administration, but the confirmations and a lot of critical votes, well, that happens in the Senate, and that looks to be in very good shape for Republicans right now.
Now, others will say, well, yeah, but if the House goes to Democrats, it's going to be all, you know, it's going to be all the noise out of Washington, all the political oxygen will be taken up with moves to try to impeach the president, you know, or some kind of wrist slap here.
Well, the way I look at it is, go ahead. I think that would be failed impeachment efforts, even if they impeach the president in the House. It's not going to work. They're not going to have the votes in the Senate, it doesn't look like, to actually remove him. And so I think that sort of thing and filling up time with that mindset actually, I think, helps out Trump going into 2020, because he can just say, look, this is evidence that Democrats have failed, that all they want to do is come after me. They're not serious. They don't have a serious agenda. I think, for example, Obama used that 2010 swing where Republicans came after him full force to say, look, they're against me. They don't have a real agenda, and that enabled him to win again. And I think Trump can figure out how to do the same thing.
Yeah, we look at it here, Kavanaugh effect. I listen to my phone calls, read my emails or texts, and Republicans that are, at least ones that identify as Republicans, that talk to me say they are way engaged. They're going to be there. They're turning out to vote. But I guess that sentiment here is, I worry, is this true elsewhere? You know what I'm saying? I don't have my finger on the pulse of those voters, you know, in a Rust Belt state or somewhere else. But they did turn out in mass to elect President Trump. It seems like the Kavanaugh effect, because you said earlier, you know, President Trump campaigned on dogging out Republicans, you know, that needed dogging out. And he also said, you know, he was not establishment. And maybe these people are seen as establishment. But if them being reelected establishment or not, is a feather in the camp of cap of President Trump, then it seems like maybe they would turn out. But I don't. I mean, I can't sense the vibe in other places. But you think it's good?
Yeah, I think that it's a situation where, with a good GDP growth rate, very low unemployment, there are a lot of things that Republicans can write home about and say, hey, this is a big deal. The question is, for example, on election night, the state that I'm really looking at is Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania just did some redistricting in the last month, I believe, that created some very competitive districts, some that are held by Republicans that essentially are districts that went for Clinton but are held by Republican incumbents. If Republicans are able to defend a large number of those seats, I think they're in very good shape. If I think that there's somewhere between 23 and 25 in that range, if those seats go, then the majority's over. But out of those 20-some-odd seats that Republicans hold that voted for, or in districts that went for Clinton, 15 of those thereabouts went for Mitt Romney over Barack Obama. So these are truly toss-up districts that can go either way, and I do think there is a path for Republicans to hold the House majority. Is it likely? No. Is it statistically significant? Yes. And I think if Republicans show up at the polls, they can retain this majority.
All right, let's bring it back home to Alabama and talk about are the efforts of the Walt Maddox bus tour doing anything? I mean, I see a double down, another story out today with another demand here. Maddox demands Ivy turn over all documents, emails, text messages on the 2015 hospital episode. This is now, I laughed about it last week because it's the old, I'm not saying that you're old. I'm not saying your health is bad. I'm just concerned not about your elderliness or your health. It's nothing to do with your age. I'm concerned if there's a cover-up. I mean, come on. Is this just a vehicle to call the governor old?
I don't know what Walt Maddox is doing at this point. I mean, I look at this and say, your campaign has not been original. It hasn't really put a different spin on I'm not your rank-and-file traditional Democrat. And I think that Kay Ivey's in fine shape in terms of her electoral prospects. I think she's going to beat Walt Maddox soundly. He never figured out a way to get traction. He never figured out a way to really set himself apart or do any real damage to Kay Ivey. I mean, that to me is the bigger issue here. He never landed a blow. And this latest, he demands this or demands that. Well, he's got to be in a more competitive, closer position to be able to demand anything. And right now, he's not there.
Like you've said earlier, it's not a, here's my vision for Alabama, it's better, it's let me, you know, and it's, listen, this is not the first time. This is the rule on both sides of the aisle. It's nothing new. But it's this, you know, I'm not going to talk about the issue. I'm going to talk about how my opponent, I'm going to try to wear down her points instead of building up mine.
Yeah, I mean, and I think what's funny is a lot of Maddox's campaign has been to basically say, I'm sort of like Kay Ivey. And that to me is like, I'm like a younger, energetic Kay Ivey who's a Democrat, but not really super Democratic. I mean, that's just a really confusing message, and it makes it hard for Alabama voters to really engage. And I think, again, that was some of the challenge for some of the primary contenders for Ivy, is give me something different, give me something better. And they never really clearly made that case as to why they were a better option than Ivy, and people like Ivy. So here's Walt Maddox, who has a higher hill to climb, and he's failing in some of the same ways to define why he's a better option. I think Ivy clearly has vulnerabilities. There are ways to go after Kay Ivey. When she's responding to questions about her health and seemingly competent and coherent, your attack, your October surprise, man, that was weak sauce. And I think that this is this is over and done with in terms of Kay Abbey becoming the next governor.
I think you are correct. And one last note here. I'm going to talk about it later on in today's show, and you're toying with the idea of putting something up for AL.com about, speaking of Alabama Democrats, Joe Reed's, I'll call it a shakedown letter to Democrats out there. So, I mean, this is something you're going to engage with later this week?
Yeah, I think this is, and I've written about, the best thing for Republicans in Alabama could be better. It would be better Democrats. Democrats that aren't cannibalizing themselves, playing turf ball. Frankly, Doug Jones was the best chance that Democrats had in a very, very, very long time to do really well. And instead of listening to Doug Jones and being like, yeah, we probably need to change the way we do our party, they rejected Jones. And I think this is Alabama Democrats saying, we don't actually want to win. We don't want to find ways to be competitive. We just want to grouse and sort of maintain the current power structure. And if I'm a younger professional Democrat looking at this, I'm looking at any way I can to take over this party, because the current party bosses have failed miserably, and they really, really, really need to press reset on the Democratic Party in Alabama. And after Walt Maddox loses this, I think that either has to come, or we're going to see a long, 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 long time before we have any competitive Democrats again.
There he is, Cameron Smith, AL.com. I appreciate it, man. We'll check back soon.
Thanks, Sean.
Coming right back, we'll talk some Gulf Reef Fisheries Management.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1236, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday. And lots to do. Coming up next hour, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, joins us. We'll talk with him. And also take your calls and your text at 343-0106, 343-0106. All right, I mentioned this earlier that, and we're going to get explanation here in depth, but as the, we talk about management of red snapper fishing, we talk about registration or limits and how that's apportioned, that the state does some management, but the federal system sets, right, NOAA sets the overall tonnage allowable in the Gulf, and the Gulf Council, one of those groups that listens to petitions from the states, also makes the rules, the sausage being made at Gulf Council, and they are in Mobile this week. Joining us to talk more about this, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Thanks for your time.
Hey, good afternoon, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you here, and this is a great heads up for people that have scratched their head or stomped their feet or been upset in the past, which I'll count myself as one of them, with the way the regulations have gone down over the last decade on fisheries here, although we have turned a corner, I think, a little bit of a corner here with what y'all are doing with the exempted fishing permits, but the rulemaking is going on right now, right? The people discussing this issue are here at home right now.
That's correct. The Gulf Council is made up of the five Gulf states and the National Marine Fisheries Service, and so they meet a couple of times a year, and the rotation this week landed in Mobile, and it's a very important meeting because we're going to be talking about state management of red snapper for 2020 and beyond, because in 2019 we're still going to be under the exempted fishing permit. So if people want to kind of see how, you said earlier, the sausage is being made, Tuesday is the Reef Fish Committee meeting at 8:30 at the Battle House downtown, so that is open to the public to come and listen to the conversations. And on Wednesday at 1:30 they can provide public comment to the council.
Okay, so tomorrow morning's 8:30. Kind of, I've been to a few of these, but walk us through this. Like, if we walk in there tomorrow at 8:30, what will we hear? I mean, what discussion will be happening?
You'll hear the Reef Fish Committee talking about a couple of other things, different fishery management plans and where they are with some different actions. But the biggest one is the Amendment 50. That is the discussion of creating a full-time state management plan for red snapper. And so it'll go around the table. All the different states have the opportunity to weigh in with comments, and they're reviewing the documents right now to decide which alternative they choose in the document. The document is about 146 pages, but you have to pick some preferred alternatives as to how the Gulf states want to move forward. And on Thursday, they'll have to vote on that to see if everyone is in agreement. And we are at a crunch time right now. We need to make some really hard decisions during this meeting. So there's going to be some pretty open discussion about a state management plan. And the biggest challenge is how do we divide up the percentage of that that total allowable catch for the Gulf of Mexico? That's where we all have to come to an agreement and understanding.
Okay, yeah, how is that? And we'll do it in very simple terms here, but the Fed set the total allowable tonnage in the Gulf to be caught, and now here we have Florida, we have Alabama, we have Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas, all players here. How do the states decide who gets what share of that? How is that case made?
We look at several different things. We look at historical catch, which state that participated in red snapper fishing, how much fish were caught by private anglers over the different time series. It has changed a little bit over the last few years on how people are fishing from each state, and the activity has increased in several states. But we look at that. We look at what those landings are. There's also some biomass discussions, which is a discussion of how many fish are actually out in the Gulf. So that comes to play in there. So you have to factor in a lot of different things to try and say, well, where has the historic fishing been and where are the fish now? And you try and combine those things to make some decisions about how you divide that up. And the EFPs came really close. I think that was a great start for the states to come together and say, these are some numbers that we think we can work with. We feel that there maybe need to be a little bit of a balance between some of those and a few percentages here and there between the states. And we're, I think, very close. We're as close as we've been in a long time to trying to make some decisions.
Okay. And it is something for people, if they just looked at geography, right? If they just said, okay, well, look at I think we have, 68 miles of coastline here for Alabama or somewhere thereabout?
It's about 56 miles.
56. Yeah,
something just under there.
Yep. I'm always trying to add extra. Okay, so 56 miles of coastline, Scott.
Should have all the way to Panama City, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's where we can get into why we should have worked that treaty out way back when. But if we had, we have that small amount of shoreline, somebody could say, well, they would have the smallest share of the red snapper, but because of things under the water, we actually get a better share of that catch.
Absolutely. Our historic effort shows that Alabama is one of the largest harvesters of red snapper, and part of that goes back to the investment we've made in the Alabama Artificial Reef Zone. There's some argument that we've made it a little too easy, but I say, well, we have made it easy, but we've also made some great habitat for fish, and that we feel that the fish stocks are rebounding because of the efforts that we've put into this Artificial Reef Zone.
Okay, so tomorrow at 8:30, Reef Fish Meeting, we can come and listen. If we want to comment, that is going to be Wednesday, right?
That's correct. At 1:30, you sign up for the public comment period. Every person is allotted 3 minutes to make a statement, and the council can ask questions, and oftentimes they do. This council makeup has done a great job of when somebody makes a point that they may ask that person some questions about how they fish or historically how things have gone or what kind of activities they see in their area. A lot of people think that nobody listens to them, but mm-hmm. I promise you, I've been going to these meetings for a long time, and these people listen to what you have to say, and they read the online comments. You can go to the Gulf of Mexico Fishery Management Council webpage and provide online written comments as well.
Talking to Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, about this Gulf Council meeting this week. Somebody's asking right here, who makes up the Gulf Council? Who is that?
Well, there's a representative from each state that is from the agency, and then there are some governor-appointed positions on there from each state. So there's a total of 17 people, including the National Marine Fisheries Service holds a place, and the Coast Guard has a non-voting seat in the Gulf States Marine Fisheries Commission also holds a seat on there.
Do they make policy the council?
They generate documents that go on to the National Marine Fisheries Service for approval or changes in regulations. Anything that has a federal fisheries management plan. Generally, the National Marine Fisheries will follow those recommendations, but they have to ensure that they meet all the legal requirements and that they pass the law test, and they don't violate any of the national standards or anything to that effect. But it's a lengthy process. It's a very thorough process. But at the end of the day, this is really where the changes start.
I'm seeing this question here. Paul says to ask you, do lionfish lower snapper populations?
That's a great question. I'm actually speaking about lionfish this afternoon at the Southeastern Association of Wildlife Association here in Mobile as well. But they do adversely impact a multitude of species. They are voracious eaters. They can consume juvenile fish at an amazing rate. So we are working diligently to support programs that will harvest lionfish. There is no fishery management plan for them. It's annihilation is the plan.
Right. I know y'all let us, not only do y'all, you know, encourage, let us shoot them, y'all encourage us to, you know, spearfish them and different tournaments out there. I mean, do you have any stats on how many were brought in through that? And I mean, is it by pounds or by individual fish?
It's generally by individual fish, and they're mainly through those fishing tournaments. We just completed a season-long tournament, and there are a multitude of tournaments that happen every weekend. There are thousands of these fish being brought in, and some people are selling them. They're great to eat.
The food
really
quality
are.
Is good, right? The food quality, I've heard, is fantastic.
So we support everybody going out and spearing as many as they can. They moved in a little bit closer. We have our Adopt-a-Reef program where you can go out and survey a particular reef, and you can tell us how many fish you harvest off that reef and try and keep that reef clear of lionfish. That's been a pretty popular program.
And people need to know. I mean, not that I think anybody's just who has no idea is going to jump out there and, you know, go ahead and put their gear on and start diving and shooting them, but they, you know, the poisonous spines, but when handled properly and carefully, you can work around them.
That's correct. The biggest challenge is when you shoot them, you really need a device similar to the Zookeeper, which is a hard plastic-type PVC.
It looks like PVC, yeah. It looks like a PVC pipe, right?
Because those spines will get you, and it's like a severe bee sting. And it's the spines that get you. You can actually grab them by the lip when you're holding them on the surface. They're one of the few saltwater species that we say you grab them like a bass and grab them by the lip.
And we'll talk about that more when then later on in maybe the outdoor show, too, talk about opportunities to go out there and help out our main resource, our native fish, by shooting these invasive species. But once again, Gulf Council in our area, this is our chance to not have to travel to go have our voice heard. Listen tomorrow and speak on Wednesday. And it's where again, Scott?
It's at the Battle House in downtown Mobile.
All right, very good. Thank you for that heads up. We'll put some links up on our social media. People can find out more there. Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. A meeting is going on right here in Mobile. So you want to get your 2 cents, or in my case, $1.20 heard, do that. All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
I sure hope these folks are buying some peanuts from Alabama farmers. Don't, you know, it was not long ago they went up. The peanut pack price upstairs in the world's most questionable vending machines is now $1 for a pack of peanuts. I hope that's going to some Alabama farmers. So and some Northwest Florida farmers. I just hope we have some of that money coming back home. All right, 1253 FM Talk 106.5. This story, and we'll talk about this some next hour. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. He joins us coming up after the news at the top of the hour. Talk about it with him. But I got to roll out. So Jeff Poor was in with us, on Friday. And Jeff and I were talking about a story. He showed me a letter, a note that had been sent out through Joe Reed, through the Alabama Democrat Party. He showed me this note and then said he's going to write something on it. He published that over the weekend, and it's up at Yellowhammer News. I also have put it out on my Twitter feed. You can get it right there, and you'll see the story about... I got to tell you, to me, it is a... And I know Jeff quantifies it this way, too, and I can't disagree with him. It is a shakedown. It is a shakedown. And as we talked with Cameron Smith before the bottom of the hour, before 12:30, we talked with him, and he said about where the Alabama Democrat Party is and its divisions out there. Joe, listen to this. So the headline here, Alabama Democrat Party, Democrat Party's Joe Reed demands fair share payment of $25,000 from Democrat candidates, calls not paying political folly, warns of a grave risk. So Jeff writes this, then we're going to get into some of the letter. Jeff says, some might call it a shakedown, I do, of Democrat candidates 3 weeks out of an election, many of which were long shots at best and at a massive financial disadvantage against their Republican opponents. Alabama Democrat Conference Chairman Joe Reed calls it, quote, your fair share, end quote. In a letter obtained by Yellowhammer News, dated October 17th, directed towards, sent to, quote, Democratic candidates seeking office, November 6th, 2018, end quote, Joe Reed makes a request for $25,000, for this is from each campaign, $25,000 for a get-out-the-vote effort, in which he wrote, entails printing and distributing ballots, passing them out, and also distributing them in, quote, churches and other public places such as barber shops and beauty shops, end quote. It says, your fair share for the position you seek is $25,000. And the position they seek are offices that they're running for that are to work for We the People of Alabama. And then ends it with, make your check payable to the Democracy Advancement Fund Incorporated, and it gives the address. Okay, we'll read some parts here that really stand out to me. And you can go look through, the whole thing. I've posted it on the Twitter feed. So Joe Reed writes in this letter, going out, now this is a letter sent to, if you're a Democrat and you're campaigning in Alabama, Joe Reed from Alabama Democrat Conference sends this out to you. It says, I trust by now your campaign is in full swing and you're looking forward to victory on November 6th. And we look forward to seeing you on Saturday. I guess I had a meeting or something. As I told you last week, I will notify you of what your fair share of the GOTV effort is. That's get out the vote effort will be. It is our intent to print and distribute ballots to counties throughout the state, station workers at the polling places, and pay them for passing out guide ballots. Churches and other public places such as barber and beauty shops are to be utilized by voters to access ballots. This is a massive undertaking and volunteers are no longer available. Whether a candidate has a friend of kin, they must pay for their services they receive from the workers just as they pay newspapers, TV, and radio. Your fair share for the position you seek is $25,000. Make your check payable, and then it goes through this. Okay, paragraph number two, y'all. It has come to my attention that some candidates have discussed withholding their get-out-the-vote money in the black community through the ADC and other organizations in the November 6th general election. Whether this rumor is true or false, I don't know. But I wish to warn those who counsel and those who embrace this political folly do so at the grave risk to their campaign and perilous danger to their election. Perilous danger. Wow. However, I hasten to add that every candidate reserves a right to run and fund his or her campaign as they choose. Here we go, y'all. However, I wish to impress upon each candidate in no small way, the ADC and I personally support all Democrats, but the ADC cannot be expected to fund all Democrats we support. It says, I am a volunteer. I do not get one dime from working to turn out the vote. Now, in other words, you don't send the $25,000. You do so at grave political risk to your campaign. You see that? If you pay $25,000, you get the blood above the door. If you don't pay the $25,000, well, can't help you much. We'll talk about this a little bit more. Yeah, go look at the letter in its entirety. The stuff in here is just, I mean, this is stuff I know goes on and is talked about, but to see it printed out and sent out in an email, wow, times have changed. Coming right back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile. I'm glad y'all are here.